Talking today, dumb money. Let's talk about tool time. Talk about bum wine. Yeah. That bum wine thing, I always wonder if people think that's about butt chugging or, bum wine. And you know what? It's fine either way, to be honest, because this show, like, it would not be ridiculous to think that it's butt chugging. I've always been curious about butt chugging. You know what I always wondered about butt chugging is, like, I know it can get you very drunk. Hang on, I'm gonna have to turn up the heat a little bit. I had this problem once when I left. It's, by the way, like 5:45 in the morning, and daylight savings happened. So, you know, my clock here says 4:45. There you go. The thing I always wondered about butt chugging is, do you still get nauseated? Like, do you still get hung over the same way? Or is it different? Because if I didn't get nauseated, that might be a good trade-off. But I also wonder, like, if putting that much liquid just into your ass, I mean, that could be a nauseating thing, too. I've used a Preparation H suppository before, and that can be nauseating, I think. I don't know, I don't seem to be a butt play guy. That's something I figured out. I mean, I know, it's gotta be totally different when it's like, well, you're putting this in your butt for fun, not for, medicinal purposes, but nonetheless, I kind of just, you know, the sensation is just not pleasing. Can I put it that way? Is that the mildest way I can put it? Anyway, bum wine, huh? I was talking to someone, thinking of driving and stuff, how much driving and traveling. I've hit the wall, by the way, officially. Like, this week, you know. This week I've just been feeling like I want to cry all the time. In case you couldn't tell from the last show, when I was, like, in complete crisis mode. But I think I just hit the wall in terms of, this is, you know, 10 weeks now of nonstop go, go, go. And, like, working super long days, working every Saturday, all that shit. So it's kind of like, Pete is in crisis survival mode right now for the last 3 weeks of this workshop. And, it is what it is. You know, I'll make it. Has it been worth it? I don't think I can say. Right now I'm trying not to decide anything, because I feel like that's, that would be a poor decision for me to decide stuff. I just, you know, it's kind of like, you know how you're not supposed to decide anything if you're, like, in crisis? That's kind of what I'm at right now. Just like, let's not make any big decisions. And, I've got a job interview Monday on the phone, but I'm trying not to stress out about the possibilities there. Because I was telling Poon Master Flex, like, what if they want to have me come out for an in-person interview, like, the week, you know, a week later or something? Like, a week after my last workshop, I was like, I think I would just start crying. Like, I don't know if I could do it. But, you know, I think she smartly was kind of, like, encouraging me to not make a decision like that right now, which I think was a really good idea on her part. Like, let's just not think about it. How about that? Let's just do the stuff. I think that's the thing. Like, when you first do something like this, you're in the mode of, like, it's all novel and interesting. Get it, novel? Because it's a writing workshop, guys. That's why you listen to this show. That's why you're here. It's all novel and interesting. And, like, sort of, you know, the idea of going to the airport every week is, even to me, who does not like travel, is kind of interesting for a while. Because you're feeling it out and you're trying to figure out, like, the best ways to navigate the airport and, like, what the little tricks are and stuff like that. But after you do it, like, half a dozen times, there's no novelty left. It's all the same shit again. It's, like, it's awful. It's just awful. And then you hit the wall where you're, like, you're thinking too far in the future. Like, I think one of the keys, I would say, you know, if I'm going to get into my advice portion, one of the keys to doing something like this is not thinking about the next 4 or 5 weeks. It's about, oh, God. I thought I was smelling my own breath, but it's definitely, like, the shit out here. I'm pretty sure it's sheep. I feel like I can recognize that smell. And I was like, oh my God, my breath stinks. And I was like, oh no, that's sheep shit. I'm pretty sure. One of the keys to doing something like this, not smelling your breath, but to go into something like this and doing a bunch of traveling and stuff, I think you gotta not consider 5 weeks in the future. Like, you gotta not think about, oh my God, 5 more weeks of this. I think you gotta really, it's funny because the story I'm working on, so it's kind of about this guy who's had the dissolution of a friendship, and the way he kind of copes with a lot of things is he breaks everything down into these small jobs. So, you know, like, if you're going to in an earlier draft, he was making this gift for his friend, which was basically, he bought him booze, but he was drawing a picture of a birthday cake on the bag. And the point that was in the story was about, don't try and draw a birthday cake, because that's impossible, that's too much pressure. Just draw a candle. Just draw, you know, the side, just draw a vertical line that will be the side of the birthday cake, but don't worry about it being a birthday cake. Just do that line, and then once you've done that, you can move on to the next thing. You know, it's very AA, one day at a time kind of thing. And I think that's really true. I think that, like, whoever came up with those AA rules is kind of smart. Because, like, it totally, everything that's difficult is really, like, one day at a time. Because if you try and deal with it any other way, you're going to get totally fucking overwhelmed. And you're going to fuck it up big time. Ugh. Jeez. So anyway, I think I was looking too far ahead and just thinking, like, 3 more weeks, like, I can't do this. And then I was like, okay, let's just, you know, yeah, I have this hell day to look forward to as well. Like, this has been on my calendar for 5 or 6 weeks now of, all right, so you're flying out super early, which sucks. Also, the super early day is daylight savings. That was good planning. But the trade-off is, like, when I fly out super early, I get to do, like, a bummin' day with a Poon Master Flex. Not a bum wine day. But, you know, we get to her place. It's, like, not even 11 o'clock yet, Pacific time. And I change out of into sweatpants, and then we just kind of hang out all day, and it's, like, super nice. I feel like this is like a long-distance relationship hint as well. I mean, relationship has been hard for the last few months because we haven't seen each other as much as I've... For how much I've been out there and how much I've been, you know, away from work and stuff, I haven't seen Poon Master Flex a ton. But I think that, like, a smart thing to do when you're in a long-distance relationship is kind of just spend time together when you're together and don't worry about, like, doing a bunch of shit. Like, you don't have to do this, you don't have to do that. I mean, go on, like, a date night, but just go, like, just go get a pizza or something. Like, don't, it's not a big fucking deal. I don't know. Don't, like, stress about filling every minute when you're together. It's, I don't know. I mean, it's cool. Like, all right, when you see each other all the time, we would do date night, right? And we would, like, try and do stuff on date night and whatever. But, you know, it's different because when you see each other every day of the week, every night, every morning, I think you have to do that stuff. You have to mix it up a little bit, right? But I kind of feel that when you don't see each other that often, I guess what I miss more is the sort of just like wake up on a Saturday, you know, and stay in bed for like 2 hours watching Netflix together. Netflix and chill, huh? But seriously, like, that's what I miss. I miss that more than I miss, you know, some of the more elaborate, let's call it, dates that we went on. So that's that. So anyway, I'm kind of skirting the edge here, but I'm trying to get through today and the flight. Once I get to Poonmaster Flex's place, all will be good, right? And then once I get through that, then I've got that interview tomorrow, but it's like, whatever, that'll be a half hour phone interview. I'll be fine. Then I have a workshop, then I have a flight, and then I have like another work week. Then I think I have a Sunday where I don't have to work again, which is pretty awesome. And then I'll be out there in Portland for the full week. So I'll go out Monday, go to workshop, and then go to Poonmaster Flex's house. And from there, be there the entire week, go to the next workshop the following Monday, and then come home Tuesday. And then, you know, talking to Poonmaster Flex about sort of how overwhelmed I've been feeling and everything. And she was like, well, maybe you should just take like a month off, you know what I mean? And like not worry about applying for jobs out here and all that stuff. And I don't know. And I sort of didn't like that idea at first because like jobs come up there, right? And I'm like, yeah, but if I get a job out there, like if I miss a good job opportunity out there, I'll be kicking myself. But on the other hand, you know, thinking about it more later, I was like, yeah, but if you're not looking for a job out there in April, you won't know if you missed one, right? Besides, like, a lot of things open and close, you know, but they're open for 2, 3, 4 weeks. So I may still have chances for stuff. Anyway, I think, though, it's kind of like a mental health thing for me. I don't know. I'm just like, I can't tell you how much I'm looking forward to the prospect of going to work for an 8-hour day. Like, that's so much shorter than what I've been doing. And feeling like I have lots of time. I have all this, like, little shit built up, like, to do at home. You know, stuff I gotta put. I gotta put an old mixer in the mail to send to Ian, right? And I've been meaning to do that for, like, 2 months. And it's in the original box. It's packed in the foam and everything. And I'm like, I just gotta make sure this is packed up pretty good and send it. And it's just like, I have no time during the day to do that kind of. I don't have time to like go to Target and get bubble wrap, you know what I mean? So there's just a lot on the plate. And I feel like it would be so great to just have a weekend where I'm like, you know, I could do a bunch of this shit on Sunday, have all day Saturday to do nothing, and then go back to work on Monday, and I'll only be there for like 8 hours. That just sounds like such a paradise right now that, I don't know. It's just nice. Like, I gotta say, Poonmaster Flex is very supportive and understanding, and I appreciate that in a big, bad way. I mean, I don't know. She's just helpful. And she's supportive of me even when, you know, we both want me to move out there, right, and be with her out there. But at the same time, she's understanding of, like, maybe you need some time to sort of recalibrate here. And I'm like, yeah, you might be right. And the more I thought about it, the more excited I got. I mean, I went to work yesterday, and I was pulling some stuff off the shelf for like a comic book club. And then I also took home like maybe 10 trade paperbacks for myself that I was like just fantasizing about. I'm going to spend like a Saturday and do nothing but read comics. Like just read comics all fucking day. And that made me so incredibly happy. It's hard to describe how happy that made me. The idea of having a whole Saturday to do that. I wanted to do today, I actually had some content, sort of. I was going to do kind of a viewer mailbag thing, or listener mailbag. I guess no one's viewing anything right now, right? Is anyone just like staring at their phone or their iPod or whatever? By the way, like I know Apple has sort of discontinued the iPod. I think that's crazy. And terrible. I just don't understand. Okay, I do understand the appeal of, like, you go for a run, you take your phone with you. Or you go for a walk, you take your phone, right? Because it's like, well, I could take a picture if I wanted. I can track some things and do all that stuff. But on the other hand, I don't want to do that all the time. Like, I just want to go for a run and, like, listen to music or a podcast and just kind of, part of what I like when I leave the house to go for a run or a walk or something is not taking a phone call or not getting texts or whatever. Like, that shit will be there when you get home. I mean, you don't need it right then. I was reading this book, talking about, I'm trying to remember what it was called. It was like a diversion or something, but a French, fancy French way of saying it. But basically the idea is that you know, this guy taught a class where what he had students do, and this was in like Chicago, so it was in an urban environment, so it worked a little bit better. But what he'd have them do is leave their, you know, wallet, their keys, their phones, all their personal items, you know, other than like sunglasses, coat, whatever. You could take that shit. And then you were just supposed to go out and wander around with nowhere to go. And like, even if you went somewhere, you wouldn't have any money. You wouldn't have, you know what I mean? The idea being that you're just kind of out there wandering around, looking around with no agenda. And it's just, it's so weird that that's such a novel concept, I guess. I keep using that novel concept. People think I'm crazy, it seems like, a lot of the time, because I'll leave my phone behind. I'll leave my phone at home if I'm going somewhere. Like, a lot of times when Poon Master Flex and I went on date night, I left my phone at home because I was just like, I don't think I need this. I mean, am I going to need it? Probably not. So I'd leave it at home. And people think you're crazy, and they're like, oh, I was trying to text you while you were doing this, and I'm like, well, I wouldn't have answered you anyway. I don't know, man. It's nuts. It's just nuts. I don't know why I started talking about that. But yeah, I would probably just, like, shut my phone off, read some comics, and stay in pajama pants for a disgusting amount of time. Do that thing where it's a Saturday and you're like, I'm gonna go get a pizza, and you're like, am I gonna be the person who goes out in pajama pants today? And you're like, probably not. Workout shorts or something, I can handle that, because it's like, well, I was at the gym, so it's fine. But pajama pants, you know, but just the fact that you're considering it. And, like, putting on a pair of jeans is like, ugh, this really disrupts my cycle of not doing things. To wear denim. Ugh, can you imagine the effort that goes into it? So, I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. Anyway, viewer mail. I called it that again. Good for us. It's mostly tweets that I get from people, you know, who listen to the show. And so, I just thought I'd respond to them on here, because my tweets are mostly private, and then They delete themselves like every week. That's been going great, by the way. I want to tell anyone out there who's concerned about this, like, if you privatize your tweets and delete them every week, you will lose no followers. I have, like, almost the same number of followers I had from before. I think I had, like, 255 maybe at my peak, and I'm at, like, 248 or something like that. You know, with pending requests in there, they're always like, look at these pending requests. And I'm like, these are not real people. Like, these are people who want to follow me because I guess they think I'll follow them, which I won't. It's like on Instagram, a bunch of, you know, Poonmaster Flex tags me in a bunch of adorable kitties. And so what I will do is, you know, like or comment on them too, and then I guess those people will just look at the lists of people who've liked or commented and ask to follow them, which is the way of them encouraging you to follow them. That was a confusing sentence, but you know what I mean. But I just always like say sure, like I don't really care if these cats follow me on Instagram, but I'm like, well, I'm not gonna follow you, like I don't need to, it's fine. So speaking of, one of the, you know, listener mail we got was about Twitter. I guess I was bitching about Twitter. And it was just that, you know, Twitter wants your eyeballs or something like that. I think I was complaining about the advertisements on Twitter and their, like, pervasiveness. And then the way they mix things up, there's no, like, chronology anymore. It's all craziness. And, by the way, I'm going to just have to paraphrase everything because I didn't exactly I didn't write it down. And also I'm driving in the car and it's dark. Guys, it's daylight savings time. Daylight savings time. One of the more idiotic things that we've just continued. I mean, it's so dumb. The only good thing about the spring forward one, and everyone's like, oh, it changes the amount of daylight we have. And I'm like, not really. I mean, you know what you could do? You could just get up an hour earlier. By the way, if you couldn't you just get up an hour earlier? Also, everyone's like, oh, it changes, you know, the amount of daylight and stuff. And I'm like, you know what? If you don't spend an hour outside every day, I don't care what you, like, I don't want to hear it from you. I'm sorry. But it's like, what difference does it make if it's light or dark out when you go to the fucking grocery store after work? Like, who cares? I don't. It does not matter. And the darkness, like, seems to encourage people to go home earlier, which is great. It's like, yeah, fuck off. We don't need you at the grocery store. I can be miserable here trying to pick my shit out without you. Thank you very much. I can accomplish that myself. But anyway, it's like, people get all excited about it, and I'm like, what do you care? You don't even go outside. If you care that much about the daylight, take a 15-minute walk on your lunch break. I mean, what the fuck? Also, during the winter, I mean, if you're not, like, an outdoors person, you don't want to be outside anyway. It's fucking freezing. Yesterday, the wind was nuts. Last time I flew out, also, the wind was crazy. It was on the airplane. I've discovered there's like, okay, a bad kind of turbulence is the one where you do that sudden drop, right? Here's the thing. Airline turbulence is not like, it's not like sleeping with your bed right next to a dryer where it's got this sort of rumble to it, but it's consistent. It's like stop and start. And that's what makes it so disconcerting. It's not like you can get used to it. So the drop is bad. Also bad is the one where the plane, how am I going to describe this? It's like they're going into a barrel roll, but they're just sort of tilting from side to side. So like right wing up, left wing down, and then vice versa. You know, there's a kind of turbulence that does that. Those are both bad. But there's another kind of turbulence that's like a very disturbing feeling, which is like if you imagine the airplane and it's God, how do you describe this? It's pointing straight forward, and then the wind seems to move it such that it's turning to the side. So that, you know, it's like a... Imagine if it was spinning like a top, you know, rotating that way. I don't know if that describes it at all. But it's a different kind of turbulence that makes it feel like the air is really slippery. And you're just like, are we going to just start spinning and then go into the ground? I mean, what is this? It reminds me of the part in Interstellar, you know, where they're kind of spinning on a plane, which we'll get to Interstellar in a little bit. So anyway, fuck daylight savings. You know what's great about daylight savings, though, is I'm mad at daylight savings and I'm mad at people who complain about the lack of daylight. I'm mad at everyone in this situation. Also, like, I was doing pretty good here just because I've been so exhausted as far as getting to bed at, like, a semi-reasonable hour. Now that's all fucked up again. You know what I mean? Now I'm, like, right back where I started. Going to bed at 1 in the morning. I mean, I was getting to bed at between 11:30 and midnight almost every night, which is pretty good. Like, I think that's a pretty solid adult bedtime. But now I'm going to be screwed again. So, isn't that nice? Isn't that nice? So Twitter wants your eyeballs. Yes, I totally agree with that. I mean, that's obviously what's the sinister side of all this, right? Is that, you know, it's just Twitter's way of making you look at Twitter more, is to put everything out of order and force you to scroll more. And you have to make that choice, which it's kind of like the laziness choice of pants versus not pants on the day when you're at home, right? Because it's really not a lot of, quote, work to click on someone's timeline and just read their shit if you're interested. But it feels like it for whatever reason. It feels like more work than just scrolling. I mean, I've been reading, I was looking at this website because I've been looking at different phone options and wondering what's out there. And I was curious, I was like, I wonder if there's like an e-ink phone. Just because I was curious about that. I mean, I have a Kindle Paperwhite, which I really like, because it's not as distracting. I mean, you can't do as much different shit on it. You know, I've been using Poon Master Flex's, had an old Kindle Fire that she never used. I've been using that to, like, watch movies on the plane and stuff. But I wondered about phones. I came across this pretty cool phone. It's still in progress, so I'm not sure about it. But basically, it's like a super simple phone that's designed not to be... It's not for web browsing. What it would do, it doesn't do email. Right now, it does texts and phone calls. And, like, optional, they're like, we might do it if it works, is like GPS, like directions. Those are like the big ones for me, honestly. I wish my phone did text, telephone, email, and directions. I mean, email is pretty good, and I don't know. I don't get obsessed with it, so it doesn't really matter. But I just don't need all that other shit. But the thing is, like, this phone costs just as much as, you know, an iPhone or whatever, really, when you get down to it. So it's kind of like, I don't know. I mean, the real answer for me seems to be to have, like, a sort of rooted iPhone so I can take all the things off it that I don't want. Like, I don't like that the iPhone comes with shit. I mean, Android does this too. But, like, the iPhone comes with stuff like stocks, you know what I mean? Or the iTunes Store, or all this shit that I don't really want. And it doesn't... I don't think you can get rid of it. I don't think I can rid myself of everything. And it's like, okay, that's not great. But, anyway, I was looking... I wish I could remember what this phone was called, but it's kind of like an e-ink display. And, you know, their whole campaign was about, like, this is a phone that's meant to be put down and, like, used as a phone and a communication device, but not a everything in your life is in this device kind of thing. And I liked it. I mean, I don't... Sometimes I feel like an upturning of the nose at things. You know, like a, oh, well, sorry, we think it's important to talk to people instead of using a phone, which I'm like, I don't know. I mean, yes, that's how I feel, but I don't feel like people are bad for using their phones. I just think it's kind of like... And, you know, it depends. I mean, I see a guy on the train. He's playing, like, a slot machine type of game on his phone. And it's like, yeah, he's probably got, like, a 45-minute commute on this train on the way to work. Like, why not? I mean, if there's ever been a time to play a simple game, like, that is it, man. And it's cool. Like, I think that's cool, but... At the same time, it's just, like, obsessing and whatever. I do, like, occasionally use the phone, though, for, you know, hey, I'm going to go to this restaurant. Do you think they're open? So, I don't know. Some browsing is good, too. I think it's a good tool. It's just, I don't like the phone as lifestyle is my main complaint. Anyway, Twitter wants your eyes, and I totally agree with that, and I doesn't require my agreement. I just think that's a very true statement and succinct way of saying something that I think I probably said over like 45 minutes in a much less succinct way. And I think the other thing is, and I can't remember if I talked about this before, but that's what this show is going to be called now. I've talked about this before, / can't remember if I talked about this before, but hour. All right. I was thinking about the difference between something like Twitter or Facebook and then YouTube. Because YouTube is like, with the ads, can be almost intolerable at times. But I'll say this. I watch an ad on YouTube, and the creator of the video then gets, you know, a very small, a fraction of a penny. But they're getting something, right? Like, YouTube is kind of giving something to creators to the point that this is actually, it's actually possible for people to make a living using YouTube, or, you know, has been at times and whatever. And I think what I like about that, or what feels different about that to me, is like content creators benefit in that case, whereas with Twitter or something like that, I mean, I'm scrolling through these ads and they're jumbling everything up to make it more difficult, and I don't think content creators benefit from that. I mean, I think that you write a tweet and that benefits Twitter more than it benefits you. I think people or Twitter would balk at the idea of like, hey man, for every retweet over 1,000 you get a, you know, a fraction of a penny, right? Because once you've hit that mark, you've basically paid for, you know, some advertising threshold, right? They're like, all right, well, when we have super popular tweets, I mean, okay, they show a tweet on the news, right? And so then that's going to have, like, so many retweets. And so that one tweet has bought a lot. I mean, a lot. And so it's kind of a... But then once your tweet is really popular, it seems like, hey, man, shouldn't I get in on some of the revenue here? Like, I've created content for you that's driven a lot to your site. And, you know, I think Twitter's response to that would be like, hey, we provide a free platform. And I'm like, that sounds like a lot like exposure as pay, which I'm kind of opposed to. I mean, okay, writing, freelancing, right? Everyone's like, don't write for free, don't write for free. And there are times, there's a guy who wrote a column on Lit Reactor, Gabino Iglesias. And I think he was totally on the money, which he was like, I mean, don't never write for free. Like, there are times when it's worth it. A friend is putting something together and wants you to write something. You should probably do that for, you know, the sake of your friendship and maintaining that, and because a friend is worth it, right? Or somebody is, maybe someone's putting something together and you're doing it for a charitable thing, right? You should probably do that. You know, and sometimes an exposure is worth it. Like, sometimes there's a big enough exposure that you're like, you know, that is genuine exposure, so I'm going to go for it. My rule kind of is like, if this is something that I would write anyway, or if this is something that I think would be interesting to write, or that I'm engaged with, I'll write it and not worry so much about... The pay doesn't matter so much. Early on when I was working at Lit Reactor, maybe like a year in, I got a couple different people emailed me directly and were requesting, you know, hey, will you write a column for... One was like a website, Cultured Vultures, and another one was a website that didn't actually exist yet. And I think Cultured Vultures pay me like $10 or something, which I was like, that's fine, you know what I mean? It's cool. And I wrote for them one about doing Kim Kardashian's workout for butts, and another one about my sort of quest to buy fancy men's underwear. And it was like, it was fun. And these were things I would have written anyway. You know what I mean? They were things that were just in my interests, my wheelhouse of interests. So I did them. And you know, $10 is a token amount, but it's like worth it. And it works out. I mean, if you think about it too, like you write these columns, right? Like I do these Lit Reactor columns. And I'll just, you know, peek under the hood. I get paid $25, which does not usually equal my time, even in minimum wage, because it takes me forever. And like, if I have to buy something, like I just bought a glove and some Vaseline, right? Those gloves were like $20-ish, $15, something like that. So, I mean, I spent the entire money I made from the column to write the column, right? I may not have broken even before you consider time. But that's a column that was interesting to me, right? And was worth it to me. And also, I think it's worth it to do some things like that. Because if you're interested in something and you do something that lights a fire for you, I think it'll turn out better. And it's good to do those sorts of things. Here and there, at least. Now, the one that I was, like, more insistent on being paid, and I think, again, I got paid, like, $10 after a brief negotiation, was, it was a website where the guy was, like, putting it together, and he wanted a lot of content when he rolled the website out, so, like, pre-made stuff. And he wanted a column, something about, like, hip-hop albums that had something to do with something. I can't remember. I'm not sure how I ended up being the... I don't know how I ended up being the appropriate person. I can't really remember. But anyway, it was a column that I was like, this isn't exactly a topic that's near and dear to my heart, but I was able to, you know, when it's like 10 hip-hop artists who... used words lyrically or something like that. I mean, it was something that basically was set out for me. And that's the big difference, right? It was a thing that was set out for me, and it was like, here's what we want you to do. And in that case, I usually need to insist on getting paid. And I wrote another one for them that was similar to that in terms of, like, it was something... It was a piece of content they wanted, and it was, you know, you're a hired gun, right? When you're a hired gun, and it's like, we don't necessarily want you to kill this guy. We want this guy to be dead. And you're the person that we've decided to hire to do that. But it's not like, I want this person dead, and I want Pete to do it. It's more like, I want this person dead. Get me someone who can accomplish that. And, you know, in a reasonable fashion. So I think in those situations, it's great to get paid, especially because I don't know if that website has ever come to be. I don't know if that ever came to fruition. And so you feel sort of bad because you're like, I wonder how many people this guy paid like 10 bucks to write columns for him. But I'll say I gave him 10 bucks worth of effort easily. And so whether or not he decided to use that, I guess is up to him. There was this famous thing about like not writing for exposure. I think it was Will Wheaton. I'm almost positive that's who it was, because he wrote something about, I don't know, like when he decided, I think he's sober or something like that, or just basically I think when he decided to get his shit together in life, and he just posted it on his personal blog or something, and then Huffington Post was like, we want to repost this, like, can we? And he was like, well, what's the rate of pay? And they were like, oh, we don't pay, we pay in exposure. And I think he was an earlier person to say, well, no, like, you guys can afford to pay, and you should. Like, if you want this bad enough that you had someone soliciting for it, then you should pay for it, which I 100% agree with. And also, I mean, he was in a unique position, right? Because he's already famous, and so the exposure he would get would be more, but would it tie directly to anything? I mean, his audience had certainly read this. His intended audience had certainly heard this before at that point. Anyway, so that's the thing. I think Twitter is kind of... What bothers me about Twitter and Facebook doing things that way is, like, it's not like YouTube where the ads are annoying, but you're like, at least the creators get some benefit. Like, if you're a content creator, at least you gain from having an ad, and you can choose whether or not to have an ad, by the way. You don't have to. So if you didn't want to, you wouldn't have to, and if you did choose to, I can feel good about, like, you know, this is helping this person out a little bit. I like, there's a YouTube channel I watch sometimes, The Nostalgia Critic, which is like, whatever, movie review stuff. And the guy's, he takes some getting used to, and then he's great. Listen to me, it sounds like I'm like getting ready to go to bed. My voice is just like, ah. What he'll do a lot is he'll have a quote-unquote ad. So he'll have an ad at the beginning and then an ad in the middle, but then the ad in the middle is like a charity ad that he's made himself. They have kind of a charity spotlight, you know. And I don't know that he's necessarily giving, you know, like, all the proceeds from this video go to this or that. But I think it's like a classy thing to do. Just be like, hey, today, you know, I just wanted to give it's just very, like, him sitting at the desk going, like, I just wanted to give today's shout-out is to this charity. They do this. Here's their mission. You can go here and donate. You know, and it's a lot of stuff that's hard to argue with. It's like, you know, little bald kids in the hospital and shit. So, I don't know. I think that's nice, too. I think it's nice that, to get that in there. Anyway, all right, so that's listener mail part one. There was another listener mail about, I was talking about the Chuck Palahniuk story Guts on here, and someone said, you know, the description of that was disgusting and looking for my barf emoji and stuff. And it's totally disgusting. I mean, it is a disgusting story. It's, you know, intentionally. I think that the thing that I love about that story is you go through this disgusting, disgusting journey. And then when you get to the end, it's completely heartbreaking. And it comes from this voice that you're not really expecting to be heartbroken about. You know what I mean? But, like, the ending of it, I mean, it almost makes me cry sometimes, because it's just like, it's this moment at the end where you're, you know, the story, right, is kind of about how it has this thing in it of doing something, you know, just sort of, what is it they say, a moment on the lips, a lifetime on the hips. You make a decision, you do something, you know, based on your sort of your base desires or whatever, and it ruins your entire life. I mean, you do something that's not, you know, there's this fear, I think, like when you're a kid and you jerk off, like, for the first time or the first few times or whatever, there's a lot of, like, weird fear associated with it, where I think that you think everyone's going to know somehow. Like, you just feel like everyone's going to somehow know that you've done this thing. Like, you're going to come to the dinner table that night, and your parents are going to be like, you've jerked off, haven't you? Well, all right, no more Christmas presents. You know what I mean? You're obviously beyond that. No more this, no more that. You know, I will never, I'll never kiss you goodnight. And obviously that's not true, right? But that's how it feels when you're on that precipice. And I think this is kind of the ultimate version of that. There's a moment in the story. So I think I described some of the story, you know, and the kid gets part of his intestine sucked out of his asshole in the pool. And, you know, he does escape. But then there's sort of the end of the story is about, I'll just tell you here, if you don't want to hear, skip ahead or pause this and go read Guts. The sort of coda to the story is, you know, he has a radical bowel resectioning, which means, you know, if you've got, I don't know what it is, a couple feet of intestine, he's got like 6 inches. And so he's saying, you know, like, he's the same size he was when he did this, when he was like 13 or 15 or whatever. Because he can't really put on weight. You know, it's hard for him to put on any weight, and he just looks very sickly. And, like, if he eats meat, he basically craps it out, and it looks exactly the same as when it went in, because he just can't digest anything. And, you know, they have, the dad hires a guy to come clean the pool, and they make this excuse that, like, the dog got something in there or whatever to the pool cleaner guy. And the kid is, like, listening to his dad out the window talk to the pool cleaner guy. And the dad is talking about this goddamn dog, and he's like, you know, I can't trust him. You know, I can't leave him alone for a second. And you know the dad's really talking about the kid in that moment, but because he's talking about the quote-unquote dog, he can be radically honest in a way that wouldn't be possible. And, you know, it's just... And so then the whole thing, too, is like, you know, this other kid he knew did this thing where he put a rod of candle wax in his dick in the hole while he was jerking off. And the wax got in there, and it collected, like, other debris. It basically created, like, a massive kidney stone. And, you know, that kid, he had to get, like, surgery, and that was his college fund, you know, so he's never going to be a lawyer. And, like, this kid had to do this, so he's not going to college, and all this shit. So basically it's like these kids who, you know, were engaging in these taboo activities become the sort of cautionary tale, right? Like, now they're the kid who it's like, did you hear about so-and-so who was jerking off like this? And then he, you know, there goes college. It's like the ultimate fear, even though it's not like an expressed fear. It's not like, I was afraid that by jerking off I wouldn't be able to go to college, but it was like, I was afraid that by sort of engaging in this natural activity that's taboo, doors would close for me. So it's just got this very, I think, heartbreaking element to it that it's a great story because it's got this grossness, and then there are two speed limit signs here that are like, all right, here's 1,002, 1,003, 1,002. I mean, they're like at a speed of 40 miles an hour, they're 3 seconds apart. That seems awfully close. I think it the story forces you to slog through this gross stuff, but it's very engaging. But then at the same time rewards you with this very beautiful human moment and sentiment. So, and I think it's kind of great because it's so disgusting that it limits its own audience in a way. And so when you get through it, it's like you've gone, you know, when you're in a room of people and Chuck's reading this story, which I got to do like 2 weeks ago, he came and he read it to part of the workshop. On Tuesday afternoons, they have kind of just work hours where people can go there and just get work done. And he said he would read it. So he was supposed to read it on a previous Tuesday, and I had flown out. So I was like, that's too bad. But it snowed a shitload, so they, you know, canceled the work session that day. So he read it the following week, which is one where it was the 1 week besides the end where I was there on a Tuesday, because I flew out Wednesday that week just because the Tuesday flight was full. So I got to hear him, you know, he did a reading for like 5 or 6 people. He read Guts and talked about it in context of what we've talked about in the workshop. And it was great. And I think that when you're like listening to this story or you're reading this story, I think it works great in a big room because it's like by the end of the story, you and everyone in the room have sort of been through this thing together. This really difficult to get through kind of thing. And then you come out the other side, and I think there's a connective tissue there. So that's how I feel about Guts. I mean, it's got to be his best short story in terms of... it's a very good short story, and it's also a very Chuck Palahniuk story. And it's kind of like if you... If you're interested in his style or interested in what he does, I highly recommend Guts. I mean, I don't know. It also makes like a pretty good litmus test for somebody because it's kind of like, I mean, if you like this, you'll probably like a bunch of his shit. And if you don't like it, you might not, or you know, you can't get through it or whatever. Might not be for you. Might not be, I don't know. But I think his books are gentler. It's kind of what he does, I think, is he brings this very emotional, heartbreaking thing. I think Choke, that's why that book has really aged well for me, is because I think that, you know, Choke comes from this story. So the sort of backstory, if we can call it that, in Choke is that there's this guy and he's extremely, he comes up with this scam. Where basically what he does is he goes to restaurants and he chokes on something. Like he'll just swallow a huge piece of meat that he can't, you know, doesn't chew up and stuff. Someone will give him the Heimlich and save him. And then they tend to send him like quote unquote birthday cards and become invested in his life. Like they'll send him cash and stuff because, you know, he'll be like, yeah, I'm not doing so good and blah, blah, blah. You know, and they feel like, oh my God, I saved this guy's life and now I'm responsible for him. It's a weird premise, but it's also, you kind of discover that it's not so much about running this scam on people, but really what he's doing is like, this is his only outlet for human contact. And like, he wants somebody to touch him and save him. And this came from a true story from Chuck's life, which is, I think it was when his father died. His father died in a really horrible way. If you read Stranger Than Fiction, he writes an essay about... So when his father was a kid, his father, Chuck's grandfather, I think it was, killed his family, killed his wife, and then was walking around the house looking for Chuck's father, you know, and the father hid under the bed and, like, saw his shoes going by, you know, and stuff, and was kind of, like, terrified and managed to extricate himself and get out of that. But then, basically, his Chuck's father was, like, on a date with somebody he met, and the person's ex found out about this and came and killed both of them. And, you know, he got, Chuck gets this phone call. I think he was on a book tour or something, or, and it was basically like, this thing happened and you, like, you need to go and take care of this. So he's driving and he's on, like, a highway, and he was so, like, overwhelmed and felt so awful that he was thinking about, like, what if I just pulled over and laid down in the road, because then somebody would have to come and, like, pick me up and touch me. Like, a, you know, a ambulance driver, whoever, would have to come and, like, hold me and embrace me. And, you know, somebody would kind of have to come and tell me things are going to be okay. And make me feel safe. Like, that would make me feel good and safe and so on and so forth. And so it's kind of, you know, choke is that expression of that, that sort of, like, desperation for someone to touch you and to save you and make you think things are going to be okay. And so I think that, like, within these very disgusting, very visceral, very, like, physical, you know, Tom always called this on the body, going on the body, which is, like, you make things physical. Like, if you're not sure, if a scene isn't working or something's not happening, how can you go on the body in this sequence? You know what I mean? What's happening with the body? And so Chuck's books really do that a lot, and Choke does that in a big way, and it's very disgusting and kind of a turnoff, but it pays off. Like, it's totally worth it, and totally, I think that the thing about his books is they feel so genuine and not manipulative to me. I think that people always think that, you know, he's going for the twist and whatever, but I'm like, I don't know, man. I think the plot twist comes in there and it's like a surprise, but I think that really his books feel genuine to me, in that they feel like he's expressing something that's very intimate and very, very rarely expressed. I think a lot of what he's saying a lot of the time is something that's hard to say directly, and he's saying it in a way that gets to be direct, if that makes sense. Like, it doesn't start out as, here's what's going on, but it kind of gets to, here's what's going on, before too long. And I find that to be touching. And, you know, I think as, like, a dude, it's more common now, but I don't think dudes are necessarily encouraged to be in touch with their feelings that way, and expressive of their feelings. And I think he's found a way to be expressive of his feelings while maintaining a certain brand of masculinity. And I think that's, like, a super difficult thing to do. And something that's, I think that's what speaks to a lot of people about a lot of his work. I think what speaks to a lot of people is, like, it redefines emotional stuff. I mean, I think all of his books really are, they come from this deep emotional place of, you know, fears and problems and all that stuff. But it works. I really think it works. We have one more listener mail, but I don't think we have time to get to it. And I effectively used all that time to talk about, like, two or three pieces of listener mail. But there you go. So be it. We should talk about this. New book on the Kindle store. Ghost Dick, Private Eye. So it's about a paranormal detective. He comes up against a succubus, a regular kind of ghost that he tries to shoot with a pistol while he's using a urinal, the trough style urinal. He fights a ventriloquist dummy, fights a blob. Hilarity ensues. Cries about his terrible situation in life. It's good times. This is one of these books that I put up there for like $2, and it's probably about $2 worth of fun and entertainment. You can read it in like over a lunch break. I was reading this bizarro author, Carlton Mellick III, who's kind of like the godfather of that movement in some ways, and he was talking about like a lot of his books are pretty short, or they'll look regular length and they have this giant font. And he's not doing that to rip people off. He's doing that because it's like, well, in order to make this a book of a reasonable size, that's what you got to do. But he was saying, I always thought, like, why not make a book take about as long to read as it takes to watch a movie? Like, shouldn't a book be like, 2.5 hours on the outside? And I was like, that's a really interesting way. That's a very novel way to think about books. Can I get that in there again? Can I be a snoot and get that in there one more time? I tend to agree with that. And I think it's an interesting way to look at books and reading, and a way that I wonder if it might be, really effective. And something that maybe was appealing to me about his work that I didn't really know. But as soon as he said it, I was like, oh, he's totally right. Like, I think something I like about these bizarro books is I can start one in October, like for Halloween or something, and finish it in a few days, like even if I'm not making a hardcore reading project of the whole thing. And so I just think that's a really fantastic way of looking at the world. And so anyway, Ghost Dick is also of a similar brevity. It's probably even shorter than that. I don't know if it would take you an hour to read it. Maybe. I don't know how long it would take me to read it. That wasn't like an accusatory. I don't know how long it would take you to read this, moron. because I wrote Ghost Dick. So I'm not going to be calling anybody a moron. I wrote a book called Ghost Dick, Private Eye. Also, I was talking to somebody who I guess had never heard the term dick used as like a detective, like Dick Tracy. So that's why it's called Ghost Dick. But I mean, it's really called Ghost Dick because it was a great excuse to put the word dick in the title. The electronic version is available now. The print version is not, because Amazon keeps coming back and saying there's an error in your title, which I'm wondering if they're like, you can't put dick in the title. That's my suspicion, is that they might be like, no using the word dick in your title. And if that's the case, then I get where they're coming from. But, they should just say that instead of, like, there's an error in your title. Because I'm like, well, there's not an error. There's just something that, you don't want to be in there. And if I can't have the word dick in the print title, I guess that's fine. Even though I would like to talk to someone and be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. This is like a detective tale, right? That's the situation we're in here. Anyway. So get on there, buy Ghost Dick, read Ghost Dick, review Ghost Dick. And, and our two Patreon donors who donated at that level are thanked in the special thanks at the beginning of the book. So that's pretty exciting. So you can even click on there and read that if you're one of those people. And I think it's in the Amazon preview. So do that. If you want to support the show, if you want to help the show, for whatever God knows why, get on the Amazon, navigate, put Peter Dirk Ghost Dick. See, this is why it's so great, because you get to type that into your computer. This is what makes life good, man. And, you know, I encourage you to buy it and read it, and review it, especially. Buying it is the best thing. Reading it, well, no, reading it is the best thing. Buying it's the next best thing, and reviewing it is the other thing. So if you can do that, awesome. If there are other titles I've got out that you haven't done that with, you know, I strongly encourage you to do that. Maybe we need to have another free day and give out some more copies, but we'll see. We'll see. For now, spend a couple bucks on the arts. The arts. The arts of Ghost Dick. All right. See you next time.